This is Sci-Fi Tech Talk.
Welcome to Sci-Fi Tech Talk, the podcast where we explore the technology of sci-fi. I'm Mike McPeak, and with me today is Jeff Sayer.
Hello, everybody.
And Julie's at a WordCamp conference, so it's just the two of us doing this today. And so we decided to do Battleship. I've never seen it before, and I thought this would be an interesting time to do it. So, and we'll start the way that we always do with a synopsis of it. It's short and to the point. A fleet of ships is forced to do battle with an armada of unknown origins in order to discover and thwart their destructive goals. Yeah, that's kind of the whole movie right there. And but you know, when I've never seen this movie before, and I've heard things about it that it was a big flop. And so I was kind of primed going into this today to just, you know, watch a stinkeroo. And when it first started out, I'm kind of going, wow, you know, what kind of turd are we watching here? But as we got into it, I kind of got more into it. And I think part of the reason was before we started recording today, I had to remember to watch the movie because I was busy playing Borderlands. And it's been a while since I've done first-person shooter games. It's been a long time, Duke Nukem and Doom and all those. So it's been a number of years since I've done first-person shooters. So I had to quit that and then go into this. And it kind of got me primed for this. So maybe I think I like the movie a little better because part of playing Borderlands is you got to, you know, run around and find your stuff and collect things and plan and strategize and all this kind of stuff. And that's sort of what they had to do in the movie here, was they kind of had to take what was on hand and come up with a strategy and defeat a enemy that you're not familiar with. And, you know, one thing about Borderlands, you come around the corner and, hey, there's something new that's going to kill you there. So
this movie is one of the reasons why I like doing the podcast, because when I heard that they were making a movie that was based on the Battleship board game, I said, boy, that's stupid. And when it came out and I saw the trailers and it was in the theaters, I was like, wow, that is really stupid. I won't go and see that. I never, ever would have seen this unless – and even when we said, oh, okay, we'll do this for the podcast. Okay. I watched it. And you know what? It's a fun movie.
It is.
It is not a good movie.
No.
By like pretty much any way you would measure it, but it's fun. Like, it's, I had a good time watching it. The movie does not take itself very seriously at all, and yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, you know, check your facts at the door. Don't worry about that, because I'm pretty sure you can't spin a battleship around by dropping the anchor and make it. It was a neat effect, and it was certainly, you know, cool. But realistically, no.
I think it would have ripped just snapped the chain like it was a thread, or it would have ripped the front part, you know, the bow right off of the battleship. Like, there was a whole pile of stuff. Like the idea is like, okay, we have this destroyer that has, for all intents and purposes, two captains, and they both have to abandon their post to get sniper rifles to shoot at the aliens.
Yeah, and maybe I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that, spoiler alert here, people, be ready here. You know, they bring the Battleship Missouri back into action. I'm pretty sure they're not going to have live ordnances on basically what is now a museum piece. So yeah. I don't know where they found this, but like I say, just kind of let that stuff go and just kind of go for the adrenaline fest that this movie is.
Oh, and you got to have the old... you know, or they just happen to be having a reunion and you have all these guys that, you know, these old timers that had worked there and like, gentlemen, you've given your country so much and we're asking you. This is right up there with
Armageddon
for me. Okay. This is just like, you know, like start passing out the slices of apple pie and American flags.
Well, okay, you know, call me a little corny, and we do take our patriotism, you know, maybe more seriously in this country than we should. But you know, when they got to the point where they asked all those World War II vets to, you know, step up and help them, you know, I'll be honest here, I teared up just a little bit because I was, you know, that much into the movie that it was just kind of that, you know. You know, one more battle left in them, you know, or whatever. So,
Yeah.
And I'm kind of schmaltzy way anyway. So,
It was great.
Right.
Like, if you haven't seen this movie before and you're just looking for a turn your brain off sort of explodo fun movie, you could do way worse than this.
Yeah, and like I say, I was all ready for a, you know, let's sharpen up the knives and cut this baby to pieces. But, you know, the first part is a little, you know, I guess like any book or movie, you got to build things up and introduce your characters and start creating the paths that they're going to follow. But once you get past that and you start getting into the actual battle sequences and everything, and even, you know, some of the planning and the thought that went into it, I thought it was, you know, once it gets to that point, then the movie actually kind of takes off, and then you're kind of sitting there going, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, I have to ask, because I was listening for it and I never heard it once, but did you ever hear anybody say, "You sank my battleship"?
No, I think they would have gotten slapped silly if they had done that. No, that would have just been too cheesy. They didn't take themselves too seriously, but that would have crossed that line.
Yeah,
but I'd forgotten that when this movie was made, it was made by Hasbro, the makers of Battleship. And it didn't really occur to me. I didn't really consciously make that connection until they're using the boys since their radar is gone and the aliens have basically blocked most communication. They were using these the tidal boys to determine by water displacement, figure out where the enemy is, and use them.
Right.
And I'm sitting there going, "Wow, that looks like a battleship board right there, the way they had it
totally
laid on the grid." But, you know, that was the only, you know, or for my, you know, casual observation, which is how I usually watch movies, I didn't, beyond that, I really didn't see any, you know, other, you know, nods to the board game. And certainly not the "You Sank My Battleship." That would have just been too much.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. It was just kind of like that whole grid scene where they had the boys and they actually had the, like, it wasn't identical, but they had a similar number system where, like, you know, India 21, and they had the similar laid out grid system with the numbers and letters that they were using were the same. So, or at least similar to a battleship game.
Well, yeah, and there's only so many ways you can do a grid and get coordinates to people. So, yeah, I'm not going to give them any grief over that. But, you know, like you say, it was the one moment when I kind of realized, battleship game Hasbro. Okay. And it certainly wasn't one of those, you know, bonk, bonk on the head moments where it was just, you know, and, you know, if you like this movie, you can play the game. You know, they didn't do any, you know, overt product tie-ins for that. Now, I don't know. I don't remember when this movie came out, because it came out, what, 2012? I think.
I believe so. Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. So, and I'm trying to think back, and I remember seeing the trailers on TV, and I'm going, you know, it looks like it could be an adrenaline fest or something like that. I didn't exactly write it up, but then I kind of heard that, you know, it tanked and it just wasn't that good a movie. But, yeah, I mean, if you go into it with high expectations, just for a little fun and, you know, a good popcorn movie, that there's nothing wrong with this one.
Well, I thought it was a bomb as well, but, like, the budget on Wikipedia, it says the budget was $220 million and the box office was $303 million. So it looks like on a worldwide release, it made money.
Okay. Yeah, I think, and I don't, well, let's see, what's, I should have looked it up on Rotten Tomatoes to see what it got for a score there.
Oh, probably not good.
Probably not. But, because I know that it wasn't, you know, a big success, and I guess it caused some problems for Hasbro financially. I guess there was even an urban legend going around that, we got 34% on, from the critics, 34% on Rotten Tomatoes, and the audience gave it a 55%. So, but it did, there was an urban legend going around that people hated the movie so much that they quit buying Hasbro products, because in reality their sales did tank, but I think that had to do more with a slowing economy and a few other things.
Yeah, I can't see how sales of games would even be linked to this in a negative way. Like if people went to this movie and didn't like it, it wasn't like that would change their minds about buying the game.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
No, it was just, I think it was an urban legend that got started. A common legend is the film made the company so universally hated that people gave up buying Hasbro products as a punishment for allowing the film to be made in hopes of bankrupting them to prevent any more movies based on their toys. No, it was just slow sales and a recession and a few other things going on. So, but it certainly makes for a credible rumor when you do it that way. But
well, it sounds pretty fishy to me.
Sure. Well, okay. And we're talking about Battleship movie and fishes.
Right.
But that one was inevitable. But, you know, there was actually, you know, some tech in this thing. We'll start out with the ones. Well, how about we just start with the ones we see first, which is just those the ships when they start emerging out of the water. They were certainly – well, I guess they would look as you would imagine an alien spacecraft would look, you know, however
that would be. Well, they're the worst spaceships ever because they go who knows how many light years, travel all this way – and then one of them smacks straight into a communications satellite and gets taken out. Like, they couldn't avoid that. So that was horrific.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was, again, check your facts at the door. Maybe somebody was texting and driving, you know.
That was good, possible.
Yeah, that would have been a little bit more plausible. Yeah, like you say, you traveled, you know, millions of miles and, yeah, smack into a – which, you know, conveniently, you know, throws one off course so then they can have an opportunity to, you know, defeat them. But yeah, I thought the ships looked, and I read somewhere that they based the designs of the ships on a water bug, just kind of the way it looks and everything. So,
okay.
I'm thinking, yeah, you know, it didn't look bad. I did, you know, again, I said it before, check your facts at the door. I did, had a little problem with them. They were analyzing the one that crashed in Tokyo, and they're going, well, the only thing here that the only element that we're familiar with is, you know, and I forget what the name of it was, a Lunium 238 or some stupid thing like that. I suppose it was an actual element, but I'm kind of going, I assume physics are going to be the same, or chemistry, whatever, is going to be pretty much
they're still in our universe, right? So, yeah, the idea that, like, it's some sort of element that we don't know what it is, that's not very likely.
No. Now, if they would have said an alloy, right.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. In all likelihood, you know, if aliens did show up, yes, they would have materials that were far beyond something that we could make in the way of alloys or stuff like that, but... Yeah, it's not like we wouldn't be able to identify the actual, you know, elements that are in it.
And, you know, like I said, that was one of the points when I cringed. I let it go. And like I said, as the movie went on, I forgot this stuff and didn't bother me that much. But, so that's, like I say, the first piece of tech that we see. And I don't know, apparently... Well, again, you know, I'm starting to think, you know, they splash landed here, so I don't know. Did they know enough about our planet? They didn't come, you know, and here's a warning to us. Let's quit sending all these, hey, come visit us, you know, signals out into outer space, because someday we may get visited. And like that one guy at the beginning of the movie said, that probably almost the very beginning, this is a bad idea. It's like Columbus and the Indians, and we're the Indians. And so I don't know, maybe, well, you know, we want to, if there's life out there, would be nice to know about it, but let's be careful what we wish for.
Did you watch past the credits?
No, I didn't. I've got time constraints.
I just noticed in some of the notes here that in the post-credit scene, three teenagers and a handyman in Scotland discovered a crashed alien pod. When they open it, an alien hand reaches out and they run off in terror. So I did not see that part. Once the credits started to roll, I just turned everything off. So
yeah, and I don't usually watch credits, although the Marvel movies have taught me I should stick around because that's where you get some of the most juiciest tidbits. But and like I say, I played Borderland too long, and I was trying to get the movies watched, and I had a few other things to do before we started podcasting. Although I do have it paused here, so when we're done, I may just let the credits roll and see what I did miss there. And the way they did say something in there about the way it was written. Oh, I guess what they mentioned in the trivia here, they did get a couple seconds of transmission off before they were able to destroy the radio transmission site. So, you know, they kind of left the door open for a sequel. But considering how this movie did, I wouldn't probably hold my breath for that sequel.
No. Probably not.
No. That would be a safe bet, because when, you know, it's just a movie gets hammered like this, yeah, they're probably not going to do it. But they did leave those things in there, and I'll have to watch the credits and look for that when we're done here. But, you know, and then I think the next, well, their weapons array was interesting. I'm trying to wrap my head around. They were sort of a combination. What would you call those things? Kind of a combination between a torpedo and a depth charge. A depth charge in the way that it comes down. And
yeah, I guess that would probably be a good way to put it. For as high tech as the aliens were, they seemed to have very low tech weapons. There was no lasers or anything like that. It was just these kind of weird canister things that lodged themselves and then blew up.
Yeah, well, maybe more like a I'm thinking depth charge because they free fall basically, or bombs dropped out of a plane, I guess, would be another analogy, and kind of like hand grenades too. But yeah, they kind of embed themselves. And then they just kind of, then they pause for a minute there. It's not like they explode on impact. It's like they embed themselves, make sure you get a bunch of them in there. And then you go off all at once. I don't know if that's to maximize damage or, it certainly made for an interesting effect. But they were, the downside for the aliens, the upside for us was that with some of the fast-firing weapons on the ships, they were able to shoot quite a few of them out of the sky.
Right. The other thing that I thought was really, there was a couple of tech things for the aliens that I thought was kind of cool. And one was their suits, how they had like tools that kept rotating through, that they could rotate different things into where their hands would be for what they wanted. What they wanted to do at that time with it. So they had spikes and hammers and stuff like that. I thought it was kind of weird that they had this kind of big rotating assembly, though. I thought it would be kind of more interesting if these tools kind of assembled themselves out of just the suit parts, like smaller parts, and then assembled it. It just seemed like they had rotating. It seemed like a Swiss Army knife on the end of their arm, right?
Yeah.
Or just like when they needed a knife, or knife snapped out. When they needed a hammer, the hammer thing snapped out. So,
well, if they have all these, we'll just correct the movie here. If they had all these alloys that, you know, we aren't familiar with, they could have had an alloy that would have just been like nanotechnology of some sort that you just kind of give the instructions and it would form into something that you need. So you would just have, you wouldn't have this contraption of rotating things. It did make for an interesting visual, but I think it might have been, think sort of like T2 Terminators type things where you got like the liquid metal and then you could just form it into whatever you need and use it that way. That seems like that would be a little bit more, efficient than having to have one of every tool that you're going to need on your hand there.
Right. Yeah, I thought that would have been a little bit more interesting, but maybe in a movie like this, you do kind of come to the end of your budget for special effects at some point.
This is probably true. The other thing that kind of struck me, and I don't know quite what to make of it, it didn't affect the movie one way or the other. I'm just kind of scratching my head. When they were analyzing a situation, they kind of used the, the red and the green colors. Green meant I don't know what it meant for sure. It looked like it meant was the difference between lethal and non-lethal. I think red they considered lethal, and green they considered non-lethal. So, because when they were analyzing ships and even Honolulu and a bunch of those, the people were were green, which basically implied, I think, non-lethal. But then the structures and stuff were red. And there was a couple times that an alien walked up to a person and just kind of ignored them. They could have easily killed them, but there was just that kind of green color to them in their visor. And so I'm just thinking that, you know, and what was the motive behind, them coming here? I kind of got the feeling it was to, like, maybe enslave us. Don't hurt the livestock, basically.
I think that's right. Like, they never really said the purpose of them coming in the first place. So it wasn't like it was one of those movies where they're coming to steal our water or something like that. It seemed like he sort of had the one guy had some sort of a kind of a flash of insight into what they wanted to do when the alien grabbed his face, that they had some sort of psychic bond or something that they shared for a minute. But yeah, it still didn't elaborate too much on exactly what their plan was.
No, and since it all goes back to Star Trek, it was actually a mind meld that they had.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And I thought that was a little weird. Well, maybe not weird, but, why couldn't they communicate telepathically? And, you know, when you grab a hold of it and all of a sudden, you know, we're able to, you know, grab these thoughts. And that's when the guy kind of went, I don't think this is going to end well for us. Because they did show little, I don't want to say flashbacks, but flashes of what they'd maybe done on other planets with taking over and conquering and destroying and rebuilding or whatever. So I just thought it was kind of interesting that, you know, they could have just gone in here and just started wasting people right and left, but they were, when they could, they were leaving the people, except the ones that were in the way of, you know, that were in the equipment that they needed to destroy. But for the most part, I think they left them alone unless they felt that there was a threat of some sort from them.
Right. It seemed to be like, what was and was not a valid target. Right.
Yeah.
So the freeways weren't a threat, but they still showed up as red because they were something that they wanted to take out. Right.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what the point was, to taking out the freeways at that point. It wasn't like they were trying to sever transportation.
Well, that's exactly what they were trying to do.
Well, but to what end, though, I mean?
They would take out communications, right?
Right.
So you don't want your enemy to communicate. You don't want your enemy to move. So they would take out any means of transportation, and they would take out means of communication, right?
Okay. I guess I'm not an evil overlord, so that stuff just doesn't...
Well, if you were to think about subjecting the entire human race to domination, wah-ha-ha-ha,
okay, dude.
These are things that might cross your mind.
Okay, dude, you scare me. But you have a valid point, though. I guess I didn't think of it in terms... I was thinking in terms of literal, you know, they were trying to stop them from getting to here to do this. But, yeah, just in terms of, cut the supply lines, cut the communications... okay, so yeah, that did make a certain amount of sense there. But you know, they did seem to be analyzing things, they had their suits on, and at some point they realized that the one guy, you know, people being who they are, they had the alien helmet there, so that one guy just had to try it on. Because, well, why not? And that's when he figured out that the helmet was nothing more than just a big old pair of sunglasses. And that's when they realized that maybe their kryptonite in this case was sunlight, that their planet, for whatever reason, is dark. And so ours is brightly lit. So they needed to protect their vision with these helmets so that they could see.
Like, again, like you've been saying, you know, just...
check the facts.
You don't want to, you don't want to overanalyze things.
No.
But to have your whole plan be that the alien ship will come around the point right at dawn, and then we'll shoot some holes in their window, and then that will allow us to take them out. Like, that seemed to be putting a lot of eggs in one basket of some surfer dude to put on an alien helmet. Yeah. Well, and like... Okay, do you know that this guy is in fact correct, that their sunlight, you know, really messes with them. Do you know that your guns can go through the window? Do you know that is the window of the bridge? Do you, like, there was a lot of questions that they didn't seem to answer.
Right.
But, you know, still made a good scene. Oh, and of course, where the two captains have to run under the bridge, and apparently nobody else on the entire ship is capable of firing sniper rifles. So they have to run up to the bow by themselves and, you know, fire these sniper rifles.
And I think I missed the exchange, but I think the Japanese captain said he got his training at Boy Scout camp or something like that.
So, yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't think the bar was set really high on that one.
No. And I don't know, but I would be very surprised if a U.S. Navy destroyer just happens to have 50 caliber sniper rifles on board. I don't really see any reason why they would need those. They've got a lot of big guns, and I don't see a need for really high precision sniping from a destroyer.
So. Yeah, this is true. Unless I had planned on, unless there was a contingency in there for some sort of what's the word I'm looking for? Insurgency or
yeah, but I think that if something like that was going on, like when the we are way off topic now,
sure.
but when the Somali pirates took that the Maersk Alabama, the Navy SEAL guys that showed up, they were using sniper rifles. But they were a special team that I'm sure brought their own sniper rifles, right? So, what I'm saying is, if you have some kind of weird special set of circumstances that arises where you need a sniper rifle, I bet teams of experts are going to show up that have those with them. Not they're going to show up and say, "Yeah, we need to get your sniper rifle out of your weapons lockup."
This is true.
But don't analyze it. It's just, right. It was a nice little thing there.
Just roll with it. And speaking of rolling, what did you think of those? I'm calling them battle balls, for lack of a better term.
Battle balls does not, it's not a hardcore, tough name.
No.
It sounds like it should be Pokemon or something.
Well, okay, how about Rolling Balls of Death? How about...
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
I like, they were cool. I loved them. Like, that was one of my favorite things in the whole movie. That's just this, like, just a carnivorous. Actually, it reminds me of the ball in Phantasm, that horror movie from the 80s? Because that thing carved people up, didn't it?
I'm going to have to plead ignorance of that one.
Jeez.
There was something familiar, looking about that. But, I kind of, to me, when I first saw it, I'm thinking some combination of a roll of barbed wire mated with chainsaws. And apparently there's some snakes, metal snakes living inside that thing because it could whip it out of a tail or something and wrap around things. But, it certainly looked like it could devour a ship quite effectively. And if nothing else, it certainly had the psychological effect of scaring the crap out of people. Because if you saw that rolling towards you, first you'd say it, then you'd do it. Because there wouldn't be a whole lot else you could do in that situation.
I'm trying to find out what... movie it was that had it was Phantasm that had the metal ball. Yeah, it was like a little, I don't know, I think it just went around killing people or something. It's been a long time, so I can't really remember, but yes.
It's like I say, it certainly was effective because you could just start that thing rolling along and it would just chew through things. And that kind of and it was just kind of coincidental. Somebody posted on Facebook this morning. I forget what it is, but it's a big chipper. Basically, they started by throwing a refrigerator in there, and it pulled it down through and chipped it up. And then a couch, and then they threw one of these great big tires, like a tractor tire or something that equivalent in there, a big 5 foot tire, and it just chewed it up into nothing. And so that that was on, somebody posted it this morning, that was kind of similar to these things, that they could just roll through there and just it's like a wood chipper on steroids. Now I'm thinking of Fargo, and Julie's not here to appreciate it.
Oh no. The balls, we do have stuff that's similar to that. Now, it doesn't chew things up like that, but we have modern weapons that are semi-autonomous, right? Like, I know there's artillery shells that they can fire, and then when they get up at their apex, they arm themselves, and they seek out moving metal, right? So they can hit tanks and stuff like that. And then there's, heat-seeking missiles. We have weapons that, once they are fired, it's not really artificial intelligence, but they are under their own power and their own guidance, right?
They have there's a decision-making loop within them somewhere, and they can pick a target. Yeah, it's not exactly AI, but it's kind of like see metal, shoot metal, or something to that effect.
Now, these were far more advanced than that, and I think it's probably, I don't think in the future, any time, we're going to see, grinding up, essentially flying garbage disposals like this. But I think we'll have something that is autonomous, that you would be able to just shoot at the enemy and then just like let it just wreak havoc on them like this does. So I thought it was an interesting idea.
Yeah, and I've never actually seen it, but I understand the concept. This isn't a smart weapon, but even like a Bouncing Betty hand grenade, where you throw it and it bounces and then it explodes. Something along that line, where that's not exactly autonomous, but there's a little bit. It's just not you throw it and it explodes. It'll do one more thing before it does it, just to kind of maximize the effect of the weapon itself. And so something like this, where you could just set it free. And
I think you've been playing a little bit too much Borderlands, because we don't have Bouncing Betty hand grenades. They have those in Borderlands. We have Bouncing Betty mines.
Mines, yes.
Yeah, so if you step on it, then it bounces up and then explodes at like waist height.
Yes.
But you are correct. And we have Bouncing Betty hand grenades in Borderlands.
Yes, we do. And like I say, I'm not a military person. Make love, not war.
Yes. You're a lover, not a fighter.
Yes, I am. And if I ever got into a fight, man, no, that would not be pretty. I'll plead my ignorance here, but I knew there was a device of some sort that bounced up and exploded. So, if nothing else, even the psychological effect of just having something like this, even if if somebody was to come up with something that was about the size of, like, say, basketballs or something, and you dropped them by plane, let's say, into an enemy town, and they just start rolling through there, something smaller, maybe even potentially, tennis ball size or something, but just something that you could just drop into a city and just let them start roaming free and just basically terrorize. It may not destroy the town, but just the demoralizing effect of having these things be able to pop out of potentially anywhere and do some sort of damage, I think would be reasonably significant.
Right. There was something else about the movie that has nothing to do with tech, which I think is worth mentioning. The soundtrack, I loved that music. That was good rock and roll.
AC/DC, dude, for the most part. They did play some Creedence at the end of the movie there. But I know I did recognize a couple. Well, I mean, Thunderstruck. I mean, that's like, and what a tune, as they're getting ready for battle, what, better tune to have playing there than just, that playing in the background. But I know there are several AC/DC songs, because it's kind of hard to forget, and now I'm forgetting his name, the lead singer of AC/DC now.
Angus, or I was going to say Angus Young. He's the guitarist.
Isn't it Wilson?
Geez, I can see he's got the funny hat, the Andy Cap hat.
Oh, yeah, and he's got a voice, sounds like he's been gargling with.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's see, lead.
This drives me crazy.
I know, I should know this.
So Bon Scott was the first guy, he died.
Yep.
Then it's Brian Johnson.
Brian Johnson. Okay, there we go. I was completely wrong. So it's kind of hard to forget his voice. And actually, now that I'm thinking about it, his voice kind of, I'm thinking of his voice in the same ways I'm thinking of those battle balls, just kind of loud and raucous and just kind of chewing through the material. So
that's funny. Those metal death balls are like AC/DC, just chewing through everything.
Yes. Well, none of this stuff was subtle. I mean, this thing was about as subtle as an atomic bomb. And like I said, I think it was all just that's what you want to do when you're waging war like this, is just shock and awe and surprise people and try to demoralize them as much as you can to bring an early end to things. And I'm guessing that this isn't these aliens' first rodeo. It looks like they've done this before, so they kind of know what they're doing.
Yeah, it was. I don't know what else to say about it. Like we just kind of the tech that they use in it is just kind of incomprehensible, and then they don't explain anything about it.
No,
and.
I think
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think I appreciated the movie because they didn't try to, say too much about it. There is no motive for the aliens. They're just here. And at that point, it doesn't matter. They're here. We really don't care why they're here. They just look like they want to take over and we want them gone. So, an explanation is really kind of pointless.
Yeah. And, I don't know. It was just there was something else that was kind of interesting to mention was that the army colonel that was missing both of his legs was a real life army colonel who was a double amputee. I found that interesting because when I was watching it, it was it looked pretty obvious, like. That they that guy really was a double amputee, and there's not a lot of people like that as actors. So I went while I was watching, I looked the guy up, and he was like a real life. He was essentially playing him, a fictionalized version of himself, right?
Right.
So I thought that was pretty, pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean, he's not exactly playing Shakespeare. I'm not discrediting him as an actor, but he's, he's playing a role that he's familiar with. So, and I thought he did a pretty good job of, you don't need a wide range of emotions here. It's kind of like, okay, I've lost my legs. I'm a little PO'd about that. And, there's aliens here. I'm a little PO'd about that, too. And so, like I say, it's,
I think he did a great job. Like, considering the, they had some, had lots of close-ups. He had lots of time, he had lots of screen time for a person that this was the first time they've ever acted. Oh, I think he was great.
Oh, yeah. More so than I could. And like I said, I guess it was hopefully to get to the point where we don't applaud them actually using, really real handicapped people. Because as we're talking about this, I'm thinking about Forrest Gump and where they had to, I forgot the actor's name. I think he's on, CSI, Gary Sinise, I think it is. They had to, they did different tricks because he, started out, was a Vietnam veteran and started out with legs and he lost them in the war. So then he had to do the rest of the movie from a wheelchair and all the things that they had to do to make him appear handicapped. I guess, they wanted a big name actor for that role, so I guess that's what you have to do. But I do kind of applaud where they actually take the time to go find somebody who who is handicapped, who can act, who can fit the role. And then you said roles too. The other one, I think this was Rihanna's first acting job.
And, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and what I had read was the producer of the movie saw the interview that she did with Diane Sawyer after the whole Chris Brown incident. And he says anybody that can, put on that kind of performance under that kind of pressure, should be able to, act in a movie. And I thought she did, again, it's not a wide range of emotions here, but I thought she did a pretty credible job as, the.
Yeah.
Okay, I think I lost you there for a minute.
Okay, I'm back.
Yeah, I lost your audio. I just kind of freaked out there for a minute. But
you were saying about Rhiannon and anybody that had done that great a job with the interview.
Yeah, you know, anybody that could handle herself that way in an interview should be able to, you know, act in a movie. And this was, like I say, this wasn't, you know, a really tough, complicated role. Not, again, not a wide range of emotions, but she just basically had to play the, well, when you're, you know, on a Navy ship like that, there is a certain amount of discipline and structure and you want to be, there's a certain degree of toughness, I think, you want to bring to it. I think she, you know, played that up rather well, and you know, I thought she did a pretty credible job in this movie.
Yeah, I again, like, you know, I'm not an actor, I have no idea, but it certainly doesn't seem like they're you know requiring Shakespearean type actors in this sort of movie.
No,
but yeah, it was fun.
Yeah,
you know, just run around, shoot guns.
Yeah, you just got to be a little badass and have a little attitude. And so, yeah, I think it all, you know, fit fairly well. I don't know. I think we pretty much covered it. I don't think there's anything else to mention, is there?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, then there's the question, you know, that we ask sometimes. Was there any tech in here that you wanted?
I think I'd be torn halfway between one of the crazy grinding death balls or one of those suits.
Yes, yeah, I was going to go, well, maybe not for the suit per se, but just the, you know, the thing you sort of mocked there a little bit, the whole tool thing. I wouldn't mind that because my you know, in my daytime job, I'm a custodian, so I always have tools, and I have a little pouch that I have a putty knife, a vice grip, and a little combination wrench screwdriver thing in there. So I carry tools with me, and just to have something handy like that so I could go to a job and just have whatever tool I needed literally at my hands would be kind of awesome. So I would go for the tool thing.
Cool.
So, okay. Well, that wraps up this episode of Sci-Fi Tech Talk. You can check us out at scifitechtalk.com, where there's plenty of cool space junk available for purchase. Or you can follow us on Twitter at Sci-Fi Tech Talk. If you have any ideas or comments, please send them to scifitechtalk@gmail.com, and reviews in iTunes are always welcome. Jeff, where can people find you?
People can follow me on Twitter at BroncoSire. That's S-Y-E-R.
And if you want to, you know, listen to the things I say every once in a while, I'll criticize the Apple Watch or something out there. But if you want any of those little choice bits of wisdom, I can be found on Twitter at DSCChipman, or I have my About.me page at About.me/MikeMcPeak. That's M-C-P-E-E-K. That's it for this episode, and we'll see you in the future.
It's the Sci-Fi Tech Talk.